How do you hold a baby chick who does not yet know how to fly? You would hold that baby chick firmly and gently. The two are not mutually exclusive. Hold that baby chick firmly lest it move too much and fall out of your hand and fall to the ground and be hurt or worse. But at the same time, gently, because as a baby chick, it's fragile. And if not gently, lest you crush it. That's how God holds us. Baby chicks, if you will, in the hands of God. He must hold us firmly lest we squirm too much and fall out of his hands and fall to the ground, be hurt or worse, spiritually speaking. And yet at the same time, gently, because we are fragile. No matter how tough we think we might be or want to be, we are fragile. Now, I bring this up because of our first reading. Our first reading from the book of Genesis chapter 18 is the beginning of the story of God's response to Sodom and Gomorrah. And next week's first reading does not continue this into chapter 19. But this subject needs to be addressed because it is such a huge topic today. But it needs to be addressed with the fullness of truth. It also needs to be addressed because this, what the surveys tell us, is among the top reasons for young people disaffiliating from the church, leaving the church. I don't believe what the church says or teaches about this subject and its derivatives. There are two assertions, there are many assertions made to the church, about the church, against the church, but two of them that really address this topic are one that, and the topic, of course, if you haven't picked up on it, is homosexuality. The first is that the church hates people who have same-sex attraction. And then flowing from that is that the church rejects them. And let me say unequivocally, that is false. With a capital false. The church, God, we do not hate anybody who has same-sex attraction, let alone any other issue in their lives, lest we hate ourselves. Because though we're all different, we're all the same. And therefore, the church never rejects either. But what's happened over these past many decades is there's been a commandeering of language. And in that commandeering of language, what's happened is we have allowed this false message that our dignity, our value is equal to our actions, and therefore if I reject your actions, I'm rejecting you as a person. That we and actions are one and the same. That's not true. I know I've brought that up before, and I'm going to use the same analogy to demonstrate that it's false. Moms and dads, when you have rejected your children's bad actions, the actions that hurt them or could hurt them, are you rejecting them? Of course not. If you were rejecting them, you wouldn't even respond to those actions. But because you do out of love, you're telling your kids, I haven't stopped loving you. I can't stop loving you. The Catechism of the Catholic Church, which I held up a couple weeks ago, a thick book, not quite as thick as the canon law book, but has three beautiful paragraphs directly addressing chastity and homosexuality. And I want to take the time to read these. And if you want to jot this down in your memory or on a piece of paper, please know where these are and get to know them. They're paragraphs 2357 through 2359. It begins, homosexuality refers to relations between men or between women who experience an exclusive or predominant sexual attraction toward people of the same sex. It has taken a great variety of forms through the centuries, and in different cultures, its psychological genesis remains largely unexplained. Basing itself on sacred scripture, which presents homosexual acts as grave depravity, tradition has always declared that homosexual acts are intrinsically disordered. They are contrary to the natural law because they close the sexual act to the gift of life. The sexual act is reserved for marriage between one man and one woman. Why? Because the sexual act, the marital act, is ordered to life. We say, well, these two people love each other, and well, they might. But love, when it is expressed in that sexual union, must be ordered to life, and only one man and one woman can actually accomplish that. It goes on, they do not proceed from a genuine, effective, and sexual complementarity. The complementarity of difference between men and women. Under no circumstances can, and I'm going to insert this because it's contextualized in what I just read, under no circumstances can those acts be approved. It goes on, the number of men and women who have deep-seated homosexual tendencies is not negligible. It's a large number and probably growing. This inclination, which is objectively disordered, constitutes for most of them a trial. What's the church doing? What's God doing through his church? The first paragraph, he's holding us firmly with the truth. Here's the truth. And he holds us firmly in that, lest we shake about too much and fall out of his hands. Here comes the gentleness. They must, people who have same-sex attraction, they must be accepted with respect, with compassion, and with sensitivity. There's the church's own language, no rejection of the person. The action, yes. Why does God hate those actions that we call sin? They are sin. Why? Not because it hurts him. Because they hurt us. Moms and dads, why do you tell your kids no for something that they want to do, but you know it's going to hurt them? Because it's going to hurt them. God's the ultimate father. And it goes on. Every sign of unjust discrimination in their regard should be avoided. It's got to be avoided. Look, we discriminate every day about certain things, between goods, between good and evil, but we must not discriminate unjustly against anybody. These persons are called to fulfill God's will in their lives, and if they are Christians, to unite to the sacrifice of the Lord's cross the difficulties they may encounter from their condition. Homosexual persons are called to chastity. And I might add, not because it's incomplete here, it's just stated in other places in the catechism, you can substitute with homosexual, with heterosexual as well. All people, homosexual, heterosexual, we are all called to chastity. What is that? In the sexual realm, it is living in accord with your state in life. There are three states in life, vocationally speaking. There's marriage, there's priesthood or religious life, and there's single life. Two of the three are called to chastity in the form of celibacy. Why? Because the sexual act is reserved for marriage, as I said, because it is an expression of love sexually that must be ordered to life and family. By the virtues of self-mastery, that's what we're called to. Is it wrong to have a same-sex attraction? Is that a sin? That's not a sin. Same-sex attraction is not a sin. The sin comes in acting out on it. Just as I'm a priest, I'm called to chastity. Does that mean I can't be attracted to a woman? I quit. I'm turning in, where's the bishop? I'm turning in my resignation. Of course not. Attraction is not a sin. That's not what God is saying through his church. It's acting out on it. Imagine, and I'm stealing this from Bishop Barron because he used this in a talk he gave in another context, but this applies. He said, and I'll say, imagine if I went to Bishop Callahan and he said, Father Greg, how's that chastity and priesthood doing? How's celibacy going? Pretty good, Bishop. 75% of the time, I'm doing really well with it. Hey, no, man, you gotta fix that. We're called to chastity in our actions. Attraction is not a sin. What we do with that attraction can be virtuous or it can be sinful. Whether it's heterosexual or homosexual. Now, because of the move against nature, this is a sin when it's acted out that does cry out to heaven. It's greatly serious. But again, we never reject the person. We say the action is bad, not the actor. So whether it's homosexuality, whether it's heterosexual promiscuity, whether it's abortion, whatever it is, sinners are safe here. Thanks be to God, or I got to leave again. I resign and now I got to leave. Sinners are safe here. Sinners belong here. By the virtues of self-mastery that teach them inner freedom. You know, I've shared with you some version of my own life. And for 20 years, I was away from the church. And I wasn't living for a lot of those years. I was not living a life that was pleasing to God. And I thought I was being free. I thought, yeah, I'm finding happiness. It's fun. What I didn't realize is I was shackling myself to my sins. You know when I found inner freedom? Yes, when I went to confession that first time after 20 years. But I found inner freedom when I finally came to that self-mastery. You see, when homosexual people, heterosexual people who seek sexual relations outside of marriage, when we do that, we're seeking something good. We're seeking that beautiful intimacy, that expression of loving and being loved. That's what we're seeking. We're just looking for it in the wrong places. If we seek it in the right ways and the right places, God is there, our Father, to embrace us and to build us up and make us more free. When we seek it in those dark, empty places, there the devil's waiting to clobber us. Oh, he tantalizes us with the gold and the bling and all sorts of different things that look so attractive and beautiful. And you say, yeah, boy, that fruit looks tasty. And then we find out it's a rotten fruit. And instead of being a doctor that heals us, He's a slave owner who beats us. By the virtues of self-mastery that teach them inner freedom, at times by the support of disinterested friendship. That is a friendship. A true friend isn't someone who affirms you in your bad ways. A true friend is someone who calls you out of them and leads you to God. That's disinterested friendship. By the support of disinterested friendship, by prayer and sacramental grace, they can and should gradually and resolutely approach Christian perfection. Again, it applies to all of us. It's a huge topic today. We have to address it. But we've got to address it with the fullness of the truth, not with the false truths that the world asserts to the church. All are loved. All are respected. And all are welcome here with us and safe. Now I say this to you in conclusion because the way God has this structured is I'm supposed to feed you and you need to feed them, whoever them are. You and I need to be prepared to know where this is. You don't have to have this memorized. I don't, but I know where to get it. I can articulate it without notes. We should all be ready to do that. Why? Because as I said, this is one of the top reasons that our young people are walking away from the church. I don't agree. Why does the church hate people who just want to love one another? That's a lie from the world that they didn't realize is a lie. And they bought into it. We need to be able to tell them the truth. As St. Paul says, always be prepared to give a reason for your joy. I'll paraphrase it. Always be prepared to share the beauty of the truth, the firm gentleness of God our Father.